I'd like to welcome you all to the October 26th, 2022 regular meeting of the Port of Kingston Commission. Comments from those in attendance will be allowed upon recognition of the chair. Please identify yourself by stating your name. If you would like to be added to the agenda for a future meeting, please contact the port office at least 1 week prior to the regularly scheduled meeting. Please submit your documents and presentations at the time of your request. We have a preliminary agenda before us. It's subject to change, and I'd like to call the meeting to order at 6:35. And if we could all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, and I believe the flag is behind us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's in another room.
Yeah, it's okay. In that other room. Sorry.
Direction. We know where it is, so.
It's over there.
That's good. Okay, so we have a draft agenda before us, and let's see here. Maybe I'll just go over it real quick. I'm not sure. Do they have the sheet with the right agenda on it? So the agenda currently is, you know, call to order, Pledge of Allegiance, approval of the agenda, a public comment period, then the consent agenda, and we have 5 items within the consent agenda. Then we have action items, 6 action items, two action items, 2 resolutions. One of them is about updating Visa accounts, and the second is about reimbursement to port commissioners for health insurance. Discussion item 7 is the budget. So we'll have a meeting on the budget. And then the financial report, and then another period for the public comment. So we always have 2 public comment periods in all of our meetings. Then following commissioner reports, staff reports, and then the announcement of the regular meeting. So with that in mind, I'd entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, excellent. All right. So before us then is an initial public comment period. Now I've got a sign-in sheet for the people in attending, but does anyone want to talk real, any quick little thing? Oh, you're okay. All right. Very good. There'll be another opportunity, like I said. Okay, item 5, a consent agenda. These matters are routine and will be enacted by one motion of the commission with no separate discussion. If discussion is desired, that item can be removed from the consent agenda by a commissioner. We have before us the approval of the September 28, 2022 regular meeting minutes. Approve the October 4th, 2022 work session meeting minutes. Item C, approve the October 11th, 2022 work session meeting minutes. Then item D, approve October 18th, 2022 work session meeting minutes. And then finally, item E, approve the September 2022 warrants and EFT payments.
Make a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I second that.
Very good. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Excellent. Okay, off to action items. We're rolling right along. We have a resolution before us, item A, to recommending approval of resolution 2022-10-26-01, update of the Visa accounts. Greg, do you want to go over that with us?
Yeah, so we just modified the amounts and updated the list of people that have actual credit cards amongst the staff and adjusted the adjusted the threshold slightly. So Chris Williams, who's the new administrative services manager, she now has a credit card, and that's the primary change. So whenever we make any changes in terms of the credit card limits or who has credit cards, we have to update the authority, and that's actually issued. Those are the kids that hang, so then we also have to provide them with a copy of the resolution for them to actually issue the credit card.
Oh, right. Okay. Great. Okay.
So I'll make a motion to rescind resolution 2022-06-2201 and approve resolution 2022-10-2601 to update the authorized Visa credit cards.
I second that.
Very good. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Excellent. Okay. And
do you want to look here? Do you have copies in your packet?
Do you have copies?
No.
Here. Okay. I'll
inspect you
in a moment.
Yeah, no, you're okay. No, we're all good. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't realize you didn't have one.
Okay, and yes, yes, sir.
Yeah. Brian Anderson, just wondering, what's the largest amount that can be a single individual with a credit card?
$10,000.
$10,000.
So I have $10,000. The controller, auditor, trainer has $10,000. And it lists, actually, why don't you just read out? It
Ray has five, and Chris has five.
I believe so, but I'd rather go from memory. Mm-hmm. Just read it. It's right in the resolution, the actual amount.
That's the largest amount.
Oh, yeah. You were just curious on that, yeah.
Yeah. There is a delegation of authority, which does vary from that. So I could still issue, for example, let's say up to $40,000, and small contract works, you can go up to $40,000. They're trying to standardize the threshold amongst all the contracting and supports to $50,000, just because it causes confusion when they go through audits and staff, they can be between which threshold is which. But anything over $10,000, just as a matter of course, I always bring it before the commission for approval. Even if it's retroactive, so that they're always aware of any expenditure over $10,000. Even though I have delegation authority over $10,000.
That's good. Okay, so.
So, you're looking for a motion?
He hasn't said it yet. He's waiting to say it, I think.
Yeah, I think we have a motion. We have a second, and all in favor?
We don't have a motion.
On the credit card one?
Oh, we already did that.
We already did that.
The next one.
I got to go through it first.
More first.
Action items number B. Approve resolution 2022-10-26-02. Reimbursement to port commissioners for health insurance equivalent to regular port employees. And Greg, do you want to go over that for us? Thank you.
So basically for years, the port commissioners, so by law, the port commissioner eligible for the benefits that staff are eligible for. To have that, then really to codify this, the port commission, you have to actually approve this. Staff is recommending you approve this. This has been common practice for years, but it was never codified because we just went through and did kind of, we're doing an audit of all past resolutions, and we're going through a public records due diligence. So when we looked at that, we said, hey, we got to put it before you guys. We do recommend it, and it's a up to or less than amount, and so the commission can be reimbursed for the benefits, so they have to submit what their benefit. They also have to enroll every year, just like every employee does. But they're not employees of the fort. Therefore, they aren't eligible for the exact same package as we are. So we just do basically the equivalency of our. Does that make sense?
So, question. Yes, Brian Anderson again. Just wondering, is the insurance the health insurance, is it self-insured for that, or is it true insurance where you pay a premium?
It's true insurance.
Okay,
yes.
So if there's some huge problem, it's not self-insured.
No, we don't have the wherewithal to go that down the self-insurance road at all. I can say I have seen people trying to go that route, but then as soon as they have an event, it's basically puts them out of business. Sorry, this is going out here. So staff recommends approval of this resolution to codify existing practice of allowing reimbursement for benefits to the board commissioners.
Very good. Very good. Okay, so I entertain a motion.
I move that we adopt resolution number 2022-102602 to approve reimbursement to board commissioners for health insurance equivalent to regular board employees. Do you want me to read the whole thing?
I think it's okay.
I'll second that.
Very good. And any discussion or... Okay, very good. All in favor?
Aye.
Excellent. Thank you so much. All right. Let's see here. We are now off to discussion item A, the 2023 budget. Thank you.
So the proposed budget uses 2022 as a baseline for the next year, 2023, and the various revenues and expense line items have been adjusted to reflect trends that we are experiencing. The board is projecting operating revenues of $3.368 million, which is a 4% increase, and operating expenses of $2.87 million approximately, also a 4% increase approximately. Net income under this draft version of the budget would be $28,727, which includes depreciation and amortization of nearly $469,000. So total projected cash inflow would just be just under $474,000. Revenue is broken down generally as direct or non-direct revenue. Direct includes operating revenue. And non-direct includes property tax receipts, grants, interest income, resource tax, and the like. Revenue generally is expected to increase. I'll start off with permanent mortgage rate increases. So by increasing the rates, since occupancy has stayed at 100% for years and years, that would automatically increase the overall mortgage revenue. The rates reflect an effort to stay close to the overall average rate for each slip size. We collect rates for over 50 marinas to determine average market rates. Current rates are based on the previous year's average rate for each slip size, because we only have data for this year, we have data now. And then next year we'll review the data again. Our goal, which was established 3 years ago, was to reach the average rate for all marinas surveyed over 3 years of steady rate adjustments. Since we base the next year's rates on the previous year's mortgage rates, we are always trailing the actual average for mortgage rates. We are currently just below the average rate though, so we did achieve that original goal, and that original goal was so that we can fund what we see on the horizon of our capital requirements. We're working in that direction. We have increased also our contributions to our reserve or cash reserves, and I'll get to that in a moment. But the idea was take a look at the mortgage rates every year. Every year we reevaluate and we look at the wait list. So we still have a wait list that continues to remain pretty strong. And this year we had 10 out of the 252 permanent mortgage slips, about 4%. Turnover. So they were pulled off the wait list this year. The wait list continues to backfill with some new additions. And information from BST Associates, Paul Sorensen, and Wagner's, which is Mark Bunzel, indicates that there is more demand than supply throughout the Puget Sound, and virtually all marinas have wait lists. Is there any questions about this?
Can I make the comment that we asked staff to take a look at the composition of the wait list, and it was very clear that unlike 5 years ago, the majority of the people on the wait list are from North Kitsap and the Board District, which was very good news to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to mention that the over the last few years, the actual occupancy of actual, not necessarily all in the Port District, but in the general vicinity of our area has increased up to what percentage now? Was it like a third?
I hate to, I know, but
it's gone up quite a bit, like 20%.
I think it was like 20%. It was 30, I think, and it went up to close to 50.
Yeah,
I think you're right.
It went up. Yeah. That's what I think it did. I think it's more than 50%.
Well, it's for the Kingston zip code, I think, was what it was, right?
But then there's people in Hansville. And
so it's 44% for the zip code. The zip code, however, does include people technically outside the Port District.
Right.
Not many.
Yeah.
But if you follow the legal description of the Port District and you follow the zip code, they don't exactly align perfectly.
Yeah.
So there was one individual that, for example, that attended the meeting, and you know, she's technically in the Port of Eglon.
Oh, right. That's right.
So there are anomalies. I'm not saying that's perfect, but it's a pretty good. We took the zip code as kind of the baseline because we can sort by that information without plotting every single individual residence of every individual customer and see if they're inside the Port District. But generally, we have about, we figure we have at least about 44%. Years past, I know it was around 25%. Yeah. I know when I started, I think it was in the low 30s 4 years ago, and now it's up to 44%. But having said that, if we were to take, let's say, the zip codes and look at the greater Kingston area, it was well over, it was like over 75%.
Yeah.
We're from this area.
Yeah.
So it's about a 25% participation from people, you know, roughly a little under 25, from people outside the Port District. So in some ways, it's really good because it's representative of the Port District itself.
Yeah, and the commission had asked that out of curiosity. Not that it really mattered, you know, in relation to our, you know, guests and ratepayers, but that we felt we were very curious about it, and staff had investigated that, so
well,
we thought it was valuable information.
If I may, the question was asked specifically by Port Commissioner, hey, can't we give some preferential pricing or an advantage or kick it off the wait list first to Port District residents? And the answer after talking, I don't have a written legal opinion, but after speaking to our attorneys, they said, no, it's also, it's not really good practice, but it's not gonna be allowed. And the Port of Edmonds did actually try to do this, and they actually were sued and they lost. So, however, you know, the sentiment is certainly understood that we wanna serve Port Districts, we wanna prioritize the well-being of the Port District residents that are paying some taxes into us.
Right, right.
So, Greg, if I may, Brian Anderson again. Just so this revenue line assumes all the slips at the rate each month. That's what's paid.
That's right.
What's our experience for people who don't pay? Is it much or
no? We have really negligible receivable. Like, in fact, I would say, I think it's so low that it's not even. Whereas I have, in my past history, seen receivables really out of control. So here we have pending issues with that.
Good.
Yeah.
Glad to hear it.
And we usually, every year, we try to get our receivables down really to zero, right? You always want to make sure, you know, you close out your books and you don't have anything outstanding. But just very little issues at all with, like, even over 60 days or even over 30 days. It's usually, that's just almost an accident that someone's not paying.
Yeah, great.
Sorry. Okay, moving along. So guest mortgage has grown and should remain strong. We are continuing to build guest mortgage.
and demand from yacht clubs, and we hope to expand to the Canadian yacht clubs. Now, we're not out of the pandemic, but we see that the border is obviously opening up, and so we hope to be able to attract some Canadian yacht clubs into the area as well. Direct sales and additional approaches to the market, to market the port, will be pursued throughout the coming year. We are concerned about the effect of price increases, and we are concerned about volatility and the effect it has on fuel, which in turn affects boaters. Mm-hmm. So a lot of boating, especially for guest moorage, it's there's usually a few factors that really affect people. One is weather. So the smaller the vessel, they're not going to, they're not going to want to transit over. Even though we're across from the I-5 corridor and from all of those marinas, it still has a distinct effect. Nobody wants to get beat up coming across. But outside of weather, which we have no control over, the fuel costs and the volatility of fuel has definitely had a dampening effect. I think there's people can't really predict. It's very difficult, even when we look at our fuel prices through, which we do a survey of fuel prices, and we look at everybody, what they're charging. It's so inconsistent. And I think it's just because when you do the actual cost, when you pull it out of the rack down in Tacoma, and you get a truckload coming up, that fuel is just really varying a lot, often and a lot. Mm-hmm. The swing on it really substantial.
Yeah.
So for example, we got ourselves into a situation where we were like $1.50 easily out of the market. And our timing was bad. We ended up having to fill the tanks up. We filled them at a really high price. Other people price went down and dropped radically.
Yeah.
Other people were buying at the lower price. And so we had some of the customers tell us, like, you guys are way out of the market, and they sent us some information, and took pictures of what was happening. So we had to just cut our prices in order to dump that inventory. You're just going to sit on it indefinitely, probably. There are some boaters where they're stuck here, and they have to fuel up before they depart, but they feel like a captive audience. So we dropped our prices in that instance, but we don't have quite the turnover of inventory that you might see at some of the really larger or more municipal. Mm-hmm. So we just have to be careful about how we price the fuel and try to not sit on really expensive inventory. But it's really obvious, even when you look at the gas stations around here, it could be $1 in Port Gamble cheaper than someplace else, right?
Yeah.
Even around here, because they're basing it upon the cost of goods sold, just mm-hmm. like we are.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that I was surprised. It seemed like it had a definite effect on our guest moorage during September and October, which we had such amazing weather, but we didn't seem to really see the strengthening or in that shoulder period on the outside of the peak periods, June, July, August. We didn't really see that continue on in September and October, which I was surprised about, other than the fuel prices were really expensive and volatile. But we believe that we can still grow guest moorage. There's capacity on the dock. We have 49 slips. We monitor their occupancy. We'll give a report probably through the end of the year to see what our occupancy is, but we think we can do better. Seasonal moorage has grown steadily, and we see this trend probably continuing through the next 2 to 3 years. I think we have to keep building the demand and come up with some other strategies but I think it'll keep growing before it starts to really plateau. And plateau will be just mainly because we're hitting capacity during the winter months, primarily.
Question about your seasonal moorage. It occurs when I walk the dock, you've got a lot of liveaboards. And also on that dock, you've got businesses, people that are running their business and their home out of that dock. And you had a big lawsuit a while back about denying somebody business, the kayak people. And now you're allowing business to go there. And are you getting all the stuff that she was required to have? Are you requiring your businesses on the dock to have that?
Well, they're not registering with us as businesses, so we would have to look into whether they're, what they're doing. If they're, if they're using it as, for example, you can have a boat and operate as an office, right? We don't necessarily have control over that. What we do is we do go through, you know, all of the usuals with insurance, making sure they're paying and that kind of thing, whether they're registration current.
When on the docks, the catamaran, it's a dive business. And I mean, you can't miss it. And then the other thing is, are they registered? Are the boats registered? Are the boats up to date on the registration? Are they insured? VDOC, there's seven that haven't got the up-to-date stickers at the end of the season. And then you've got the electrical problems that you're not following through on it well enough.
So we conduct regular audits, you know, go through, and then we send them letters. We follow through on with all of our permit moorage as well as the guest dock if they're not registered.
The next thing about your liveaboard situation is you're not monitoring your liveaboard for sewage discharge.
We actually do have a log, and we are monitoring them for sewage discharge.
And the other part of that is the gray water is worse than the black water, and you're creating a nuisance in the bay. And you're two things you're doing in the bay that are illegal. You're running a boatyard because you are washing bottoms and dumping it in the bay, and you are dumping gray water in the bay. And people in the bay own that property, and they have the right to sue you.
Well, yes, I would say one, we have enforced with anybody doing any work on the boats, we have enforced a right to the Department of Ecology requirements as to if you're cleaning your bottom, how they go about doing it. Do we go to underwater, and are we underwater actually monitoring?
You're attracting people to do bottom work on their boat by having the water turned on at the boat launching ramp. I see it every day. They're washing the bottoms off. You have nobody there to check if it's a sloughing bottom or a hard bottom. And you have nobody to check that.
Yeah.
And it's going right there, draining directly into Puget Sound.
Well, at the boat launch, you're saying?
Yes.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That's why you're running a boatyard. Yeah. You should have a boatyard permit. Because you're running a boatyard. You're doing bottom work. Because you're allowing it to be done on your property.
Well, we will, we can enforce the rules, regulations in terms of not allowing people to do that to some extent. We do have a limited amount of people that are actually monitoring that. Our staffing is limited, and we do operate 7 days a week, 360 days a year. So could there be people doing that, breaking the rules? Yes. If we catch them, would we stop them? Yes. But I believe that, and I can talk to the harbor master about this, and we can, we'll register each of these things. And if there's specific instances where somebody needs, we need to enforce it against a specific customer or tenant, or not a tenant, but a specific customer, we're glad to. There are some things where we do it as a matter of best practice, and then there are other instances where, for example, if someone's not registered, we're not an enforcement agency. But we do report them, and there's the WDFW, and they come through and regularly, and we invite all regulatory agencies. We are just got inspected by four regulatory agencies, including Department of Ecology.
Yep.
So, we also depend upon the regulatory agency to enforce their own rules to some extent here.
You should turn your water off there. That's the thing you should do, because you're not monitoring that at all. I've never seen you guys out there monitoring that water. I've been there hundreds of times, mm-hmm. and I've never seen one port employee ever monitoring people washing their boats.
And I think the water supply, though, is more so about getting the salt water out of your engine more than anything. I mean, I've had boats in my past, and you don't want corrosive salt water in there.
There are Department of Ecology, yeah. And I just attended a whole conference, and they just went over the Department of Ecology. Actually, people went over exactly what they're allowed to do and what not to do. I will make sure that the staff go over that.
Yeah.
That exactly, and then if we see that there's any, if there's some issues or somebody observes it. We're usually around, but if they do it after hours, obviously we're not going to notice that. But if it's during, and
turn it off when you haven't got it monitored.
Turn the water off. An option, but we also have customers saying, "Hey, we want to be able to have access to that."
They are customers, are they? Are they paying any money for that water?
Well, they pay it for the, they certainly pay it for mortgage if they're using the guest dock, for example, operating out of the...
We're talking about the water over at the boat launching ramp. We're talking about the water at the boat launching ramp.
Yeah.
Those aren't your customers.
They a lot of times they actually use the boat ramp and then they use the guest dock and they're staying on the guest dock.
No, they pay for the boat ramp.
I mean, there are some people that are just using trailer vessels. So,
yeah.
But what I would say is, if we need to tighten up on that, duly noted, I'll talk to Ray, the harbor master, and we'll tighten up on it.
You should turn the water off unless you have a person over there to monitor it.
We'll take a look at that.
And the other one is, if you can't even get boat registrations on the boats, how are you going to monitor that? You've got the boat registration and you have to have insurance. Everybody has to have insurance and registration.
And we audit them continually. We do. We go through and we have a spreadsheet of every single customer. We look at whether they're registered or not. We send out letters. We also, we enforce on the insurance as well, pretty aggressively. I would not say that I can sit here and tell you exactly what percentage have their insurance current, but I looked it up the other day, and we also, we call the WDFW, they come over and then they can actually enforce those, their own regulations on that. But we do tell them, like, look, you have to have the registration, you have to have insurance, just like all the other marinas.
A sticker has to be on the boat.
Yeah.
And just this last month, I walked down B dock. There are 7 boats on B dock. They don't have a sticker.
Yeah.
And those boats, if they have to have their sticker, some of them are 3 years old. And if you're providing mortgage for something, and you've got people on the waiting list that have up-to-date stickers that would like to have mortgage,
yeah,
they're following all the state laws.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you either get them to get stickers or get them out of there?
Greg, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Just for a second here. With regards to water at the ramp,
mm-hmm,
I always thought that because of invasive grass species and so forth, you kind of require to clean your trailer off so you don't take something somewhere else, or I guess even bring it in. But I don't know if I've seen a ramp that doesn't have water available for engine flushing and for that. So that's mm-hmm, just one thing. Number two, on the stickers and insurance, those are both provisions of tenant agreements.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And if a tenant is in violation of the tenant,
yep,
agreement,
mm-hmm,
there's a protocol that you have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
It's lengthy, but
yeah,
give them as much time and chance to fix it as you can.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then they're out.
Yeah.
So I think you've dealt with the provisions of both those items, insurance and stickers, in the tenant agreement. And
mm-hmm,
you're probably doing as much as you can to enforce that. I mean, you can't just, if you don't have a sticker on the day after, July 1st, you're not going to get tossed out of the marina. But
yeah,
if you continue to violate your tenant agreement, then you would,
yeah,
I would imagine.
Yeah, and I think it's like anything. You want people to, just like we want them to go buoy test, you want them to take the boat out, you have to use the boat. Ideally, you don't boat sitting. It's a good way to increase the risk of having a derelict vessel. So there have been vessels that we did actually kick out of the marina as a result of not complying with this. Do we need to? I'll take another look at it, and I'll report back to the commission on the next,
yeah,
a month from now, and I'll give you a breakdown of anything that we see, that anybody that's not in compliance with this, and we'll give you at least numbers. We'll,
yeah.
I don't really feel comfortable calling people out publicly, but we'll tell you that we've actually,
yeah,
anywhere where we're at in the process regarding anybody that is not in compliance. The question about whether or not we should shut the water off. Let's take that up. We'll talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boatyards have, correct? Well, you wash them in a boatyard. You,
yeah,
wash your bottom off and you can't bring it out of the water.
Yeah.
And it goes into a drain that recycles that water. That water does not go into Puget Sound. And they continue to
mm-hmm,
use that water.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they take it.
Like a car wash.
Yes, like a car wash. You're doing the same thing as a car wash. Will the car wash allow to put their stuff right into Puget Sound?
Well,
no.
Here's the thing. We'll take a look at it. I'll look at that. We'll go over it with staff, and with how Ray's not here, I can't even to ask him, and what he's observed. I know that I've been over there at the boat launch, just so you know, and I have watched a few people. I'm not out there all the time by any stretch. I wish I was out a little bit more. But I watch people, and I watch what they can do and they can't do, and I just went over it again with the DOE representative. So, but if we need to enforce our regulations more aggressively, if we're not doing a good enough job, then we will do that.
And they've also been painting bottoms there, too.
I've never seen anybody paint a bottom either. There. But
I can even give you the guy's name.
Okay, well, I would give it to, you know, we'll talk to Ray about that. We'll we can talk after. So anyway, on the seasonal mortgage and the guest mortgage, which kind of combined, you know, that gives us transient. And I think, you know, we've grown that line of business pretty substantially. We've doubled the revenue in 3 years, and it seemed like it continues to grow. And I think it's really by putting direct efforts into that. And we're going to continue to do that because I still think it's an area where I know we can increase revenue and it goes directly to our bottom line.
Are you collecting Zillow boards for that? Your seasonal mortgage?
Yes.
And you weren't supposed to have any more liquor boards, but you're adding more liquor boards then? At the seasonal mortgage?
They're not. Yes, that's correct.
So the seasonal mortgage, they move out and anchor out.
But we have reduced our liquor boards, and we know that liquor boards create risk, generally speaking. And we've reduced our, we just let them attrition out as they, if they age out or they relocate. And so we're down, we have 5 liquor boards at this point, which is, I think we were at over 14 when I started.
And you've got at least 3 more on the
guest. Well, we do have, but there are people using seasonal mortgage that get charged a liquor board charge.
And so you're adding liquor boards on the guest dock?
That's right, 4.
So is that going to be a port policy that you can liquor board on the guest dock?
Until we fill out the guest mortgage and we generate more revenue, it's one way to, you know, to have those slips filled. And I would say that during COVID, it actually protected the port substantially from having derelict vessels and having people take those slips, park there, we can't evict them, like all these other marinas did all over. And so I think it actually served us because it increased revenue, which reduces the burden on everybody else for increasing, you know, rates. We doubled the revenue. We really closely monitor who goes in there. We get pictures of the vessels. We try to screen them from going in for seasonal mortgage. I think that, honestly, I think Ray and the staff have done a pretty good job screening people and letting them in there and then trying to enforce it. It does take capacity off where you get these people just dumping their boats off there, and then these other marinas, they finally got to kick them out after the moratorium was lifted. During the COVID, but they lost, you know, someone lost 2 years plus of income, and they also increased the risk, and then they abandoned some of those vessels, so now you've got to eat that cost until you get the derelict vessel program, hopefully they'll recover that. So I think there's a double-edged benefit to that approach. Admittedly, liquor boards create risk, there's no question, so but we try to monitor them closely. So we'll try to do a better job of that, though. I'm not disagreeing that we can't improve. So utilities, we're closely monitoring so that we can recover our utility costs going forward. I think that's just kind of an ongoing effort, and I can't sit here and say that we know exactly that we're covering, you know, we can recover costs, you can't make money off utilities, but you can recover those costs. We roll out utilities, some of the utilities actually get rolled into our overall rates. So it, sometimes it gets blurred versus if you actually separate them out and if you have like these a la carte charges, then you can say, okay, you get your water charge, a sewer charge, et cetera. So we're just looking at all of our utilities and then we're trying to see what is actually where we empirically can have a basis for where that benefit's going and then try to recover those costs.
Yeah.
But don't you charge
Ed, if we could, because we're really, this is like a budget meeting, so if we could just get to the budget part and then we can public comment coming right up, so yeah. I'm sorry, but it's kind of distracting for Greg to you know, be on with this too, so if you wouldn't mind.
Real estate and lease revenue, sorry about this. I'm trying to make sure this is working for the people that are zooming in.
Yeah, we've got a couple zoomers there.
So real estate lease revenue, I think, should stay relatively flat except for CPI adjustments where applicable. Property taxes increase 1% and they're capped due to legislation. So we, you know, we currently collect about, I think, about $227,000. And so that just that's just going to be a small uptick. For some ports, even 1% is a pretty substantial amount of money because they might be based countywide or they have a large property base inside their port district. But ours is relatively small, given that there's 12 port districts in Kitsap County. So there's not really a tremendous amount of upside there. Parking. So parking is a little bit challenging to predict, but we expect the parking revenue to continue to strengthen. You know, it's nearly reached pre-pandemic levels, and we know that Kitsap Transit is kicking off a marketing campaign to increase ridership, and I think that they, I think they're working very hard to provide continuity of operations, and if they provide a good level of service, we benefit directly through parking revenue. The state varies. We all know their struggles. They seem to have both staffing and mechanical issues. Kitsap Transit does not seem to be having staffing issues at all. So I just hope that the state varies. I think it's going to be a long haul for them to get it fully turned around. But parking has been steadily increasing, and we hope that it keeps continuing. But I think it will. So fuel, we treat fuel as its own line of business. Prices and costs have been prone to volatility, as I said earlier, with getting record highs. And the volatility has a distinct dampening effect on the demand for boating, especially after a long period of record low prices. Fuel prices have increased significantly, so the revenues have increased, but so have the cost of goods sold. So the line of business could move the gross revenue numbers up or down, but will have little effect on improving profitability. It's only if we can increase volume throughput of the fuel dock. If prices remain too high, it will definitely decrease guest mortgage revenue and profit. Mm-hmm. Turning to expenses, so the budget reflects a 5% adjustment across the board for all employees. Other ports and agencies are adjusting by CPI, and they usually base their CPI on the June numbers, which is 10.1% in some cases. You know, given the aggressive interest rate hikes by the Federal Reserve, we believe we are already in a recession. Recessions are formally defined only in retrospect, but it seems to have an effect in consumer demand for discretionary spending, which voting falls under. So if the cost of living does not come down, you know, we might look at some adjustments next year, through the coming year, but permanent increases using current CPI just do not seem justified at this time. Having said that, we base compensation generally on market data and performance. We have a goal of retaining staff and investing in them. Staffing turnover is extremely expensive, it's time consuming, and it's incredibly challenging to push the goal with new qualified employees, as everybody sees in this market. And competition for qualified staff has become even more difficult in the public sector, as well as having to compete with private sector companies. But we've had, luckily, I think we have a really good team, and we lost one employee, and we were able to backfill that role through an employee referral, internal employee referral, for the administrative services manager. So we expect to have some continuity in terms of staffing. So the employee medical, when we reached out, we don't have the actual numbers yet. Usually by this time we do have them, but we don't have it yet. But they estimated it will increase maybe between 5% and 10% for medical. So we budget 7.5% increases in here. But we'll see what the actual numbers ultimately end up being. Pension expense. The pension contribution requirements are issued by the state of Washington and have started to vary a little bit year to year. It used to be they kind of set them and they stayed for a few years, but now we're starting to see more consistent changes in that. So this year right now, the individual employee contributions are 6.36%. and employer contributions have increased from 10.25 to 10.39%. Training and education opportunities, I said, well, mainly, you know, we're going to try to be updating our staff on the marina management software and get them training on that. We're not really utilizing it to its fullest extent. We think it has quite a bit more to offer. But we'll also be researching other alternatives for accounting software. I don't see us making any, we're certainly not going to make any radical changes, but we're using QuickBooks currently, and it has its own quirks. So that we're going to at least consider looking at an accounting software probably for 2024. And of course, the accounting software would have to work very closely with the marine management software. And we have our marina management software is not commonly found. And so we don't see quite the extent of support that we would like to have. Because it's a really critical tool actually to provide actually a lot of value for also customers. So we communicate through that software and send out a lot of information. So we think we'll get more out of it. Under technology, we've covered what we think our needs are for hardware, software, workstations, and laptops for the coming year, and we're not expecting any significant changes in 2023. You know, every year I brief the commission on IT security, for example, and what we're doing, and we believe that we're very, very current. We have a lot of redundancy. We have four layers of redundancy, and then we use Olympic Educational Service District as our IT consultant, and they supply IT consulting for all the school districts, so they have a pretty high level of confidence, because obviously they're protecting the safety of kids, and so that's, I think at this point, we don't need to do anything further, but that can change in a moment. But if it does change, we'll keep you informed. Utilities, we just were notified that utilities are expected to increase, and we budgeted a 5% increase based upon the information from PSC. And excise taxes, no changes are expected. Credit card charges, so we feel like we've been paying excessive fees for credit card, and our finance director, Audra Trainer, she's identified this as an area of concern. We believe we can reduce the credit card charges annually. However, we need to integrate these changes both with our business processes, our customers, banking, and then also we have to coordinate with Kitsap County since they're our treasurer.
Got it.
And that's created a more complex dynamic than what we thought it would in terms of trying to implement some changes with Kitsap County. And they actually just went through quite a big change on their own system, so they're trying to still keep that, making sure it's robust and catch up. But we do look at our credit card charges, and we do think that it's really excessive. And I would have to say I'm concerned about the actual benefit from using DocWa, whether we would get that demand already, and whether that's really justified at this point, but we're going to take a look at that through the coming year. Talking about just about cash reserves, switching a little bit, just so that people, you don't really see that in the P&L, but it'll be sort of something that we report out on. And our cash reserves, you know, in January 2019 were $831,000. And they're currently at $2.613 million. And we hope to exceed $2.8 million by the end of this year. Mm-hmm. And I think we have a really good chance of doing that. If we achieve that goal, we've grown our reserves by $2 million over the past 4 years, which will align with about $500,000 in annual average contributions to our savings. You know, we take our responsibilities as fiduciaries of the public trust very seriously, and we hope these results will instill confidence that we can be reliable stewards. We realize also that those cash reserves are insufficient for what we're going to see in 10, 15 years when we get to the replacement of the marina. We're trying to build our annual savings contribution to over $1 million annually to fund our long-term cost for replacement of our capital assets. However, we will have operating expenses, capital repair and replacement ongoing, and that will be a real challenge. Staff have built the cash flow model that currently goes for 30 years. Of course, you have to look at the assumption of going to the cash flow model, but I think that that's not done at very many ports because a lot of times they don't like the answer that they're going to see.
Yeah, right.
It's easy to ignore something that you're not going to have to live with because I'll probably be dead. But that means that if we change our behaviors now, we don't have to go through these painful price increases where we know that there's such a shortfall. So we've closed the gap to about halfway within 4 years, and we're going to look at trying to build more business, and we're going to look at diversifying our business, our lines of business, be able to make up that that deficit. We're also looking at trying to reduce our capital exposure, our costs. I think we're doing some good things, but until we've actually proven that, I don't want to get out too far in front. But when I look at the estimates for replacement of marinas around the area, so for example, the city of Des Moines currently is in the process of doing cost estimates for replacing their marina. And they have cost estimates for open moorage, of just pure open moorage, for 700 slips of over $30 million. And if they introduce covered moorage, it goes all the way up to $60, $65 million. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's almost no revenue model that supports that kind of cost. Yeah. So we're looking at how do we control our capital costs of replacement, and then what's reasonable in terms of how we can perform within the market. And that's one of the reasons why we've been looking at development and developing the uplands, getting real estate development going, and then looking at, and that does look like we've ran that model, and I think the assumptions are pretty conservative, we're not way out, but it's just a pro forma, right? Until you really get the rubber meets the road, and you actually try to build a house, you don't know what it's going to cost until that moment. And the timing is really bad to try to do any kind of real empirically based estimates on construction. It's just the cost for the supply chains are broken, you have the pandemic, you have just labor charges and getting people. So I would not say that this is the best time to come up and really use any sort of assumptions that you could actually live with at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit, I'm not ready to just adopt the city of Des Moines numbers for our assumptions for you down the road, but we have looked at the Port of Bremerton for what they're doing with their breakwater, for example. We looked at the Port of Port Angeles and how they built out a whole model, a financial model for that marina, which is very similar to our marina, similar in age, similar number of slips. They have a fuel dock. There's a lot of similarities. So they came up with around a $16 million price tag, and they were looking to sell that marina. And they have about the same kind of horizon line we do. We're going to try to push our horizon line out further through aggressive maintenance repair. And so that's kind of where we're at. We know we have to start. If we do it, the sooner we start making, putting all these efforts into play, which we've had to do in the past 3-4 years, I think the easier it will be long-term to create stability.
Mm-hmm.
We had an LG, our limited tax general obligation debt payment. It's usually hovers around $85,000 every year. That
was for the marina.
For the covered mortgage.
Covered mortgage.
Yeah, we have about $730,000 left to pay on it. Before we go out and think about taking on any more debt. Or issuing taxes. We know pretty much from the cash flow model we can't tax our way out of this, we can't grant our way out of this. I know a lot of other ports and marinas are trying to get appropriations right now. That's a pretty tough lift as well, and they're all fighting over the same money and trying to get their state senators and the legislatures to fund them. So we'll see how successful that is, but they're using kind of almost every tool in the toolkit to fund the major capital repair and replacement if they're having to do it right now. That's just the way it is. So the primary lines of business where we're focusing, as I said, it's the marina, economic development, and existing lines of business such as parking and fuel. and projects to support our responsibility as a transportation hub. I think that's that might be probably one of the greatest opportunities for the Kingston, which most marina operators and small ports don't have. Because we're a transportation hub, we have access potentially to some of the federal funds.
Yes.
And it's a different discussion actually when you frame it that way, when you go out for funding at the state level too. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. In summary, we prioritize first and foremost safety of life and property. Secondly, we try to maintain continuity of operations. And third, and very importantly, we try to create economic opportunities. Open to any questions.
I just wanted to have you explain for everyone. We have the depreciation of basically $500,000 that comes out of expense, mm-hmm. or is shown as an expense. And so that's, how does that work? Where else does that show up as income? Or as a contribution to a marina replacement fund or, mm-hmm, or whatever, mm-hmm. where does that go?
So the depreciation and amortization, that's based upon the book value of those assets. So we have an asset list, and when you first build something or it becomes capitalized. And then you have to take it, usually it's a straight line depreciation over an assumed life and those lifespans are pretty much determined by SAO. We just have to adopt what they want us to adopt. And it's over anything usually over $5,000 and has over a 5-year lifespan. So when that comes off of, when you look at it on paper, we put it as an expense line item. And you can, and then what you'll see though is, let's just say at the bottom line where it says net income of $28,000. That's already, all that depreciation has already been deducted out of the total revenue. So that number, though, that amount, that's why you see our cash reserves continuing to grow. And normally, the depreciation is used as kind of a baseline to say, hey, you have to deduct this because you have to save that money to replace those capital assets. So you should be saving that depreciation amount. It should be going into an account to pay for the replacement of those things. Mm-hmm. The flaw in that is that it's actually way understates, as we know now, it way understates what the threshold will be for the replacement of that capital asset down the road. We know that the cost for the replacement of these capital assets is increased. There's different calculation on this, but it increases annually really significantly for water-dependent assets. So what you'll see is on the balance sheet, you'll see that we keep increasing our checking and savings, which is not included here. But that's why I called out, hey, here's what we have in the bank, yeah. For cash reserves. We started with $830,000, let's say, 4 years ago. We're now going to probably end at over 2.8. So we've added $2 million to our balance sheet. And then you can see that in the reserve accounts, which is, you'll see in the balance sheet under checking and savings usually. So that's where you see the improvement, even though here it looks, doesn't look very good. You're only making $28,000. And that's the challenge is, if I know, let's say I get a car and I have that car for 20 years, I know when I go to replace that car's going to cost me a lot more money. And so what we try to do is we try to take today's estimated cost for those capital,
right.
which we estimated, just roughly, at $30 million for all of our assets. And what we did was we used anybody that had currently or was currently working on the replacement of a specific asset, let's say the fishing pier, mm-hmm. or replacement of the breakwater, or replacement of the seawall, or replacement of the actual docks. And then we used that number in our assumption in terms of coming up with roughly a $30 million number. We're going to actually hire and bring in, we haven't really executed on that, and I had told the commission a few months ago that we were going to do this, and we haven't executed on it, but we have, we'll bring in somebody to come up with real numbers in terms of what the estimated costs are for each one of these assets, and that will roll into the assumption for the cash flow model. But I think the $30 million
is a pretty fair number when you total these things up for current costs.
So then is the $500,000 depreciation basically show up in the cash reserve accounts?
Yes.
Okay.
It also lowers your balance sheet, the asset.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
And that's what you really need it for. And what you're using that number for is to say how much you need to replenish to put in a savings account.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, but that's based on the cost of the thing at that time, not the inflated cost.
So we estimate the cash flow was just came in for this coming year just below $474,000 is what we believe will have an inflow of cash.
Yeah.
And then the...
Where is the $474,000? I'm not seeing it.
It's basically depreciation plus your net income.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And that. Yeah.
So I think part of the... struggle too is, and what we haven't necessarily done is recommended financial policies to the commission yet. But we built the cash flow model out, which gives us a predictive kind of model that we're going to be up against it maybe 10, 15 years. And we know what that trajectory looks like. And I think, we need to put a burden on, you have to put a burden on the staff. Like, you got to come up with a plan on how to balance your budget over that life cycle. And that's a heavy burden, but it's a that's the reality of it. And that way, it'd be easy to kick it down the road to somebody else and they inherit that. But if we do it now, I don't think it, like, we already did a big, I think probably one of the most painful components of it, because going from at the very bottom of the market,
yep,
for permanent mortgage rates to the average rate, we took that into three chunks, right? So the first one we took, we took a third kind of a thing is how it worked out. Now we know we're just below the average. We do have a wait list still, but I'm a little concerned because I do believe that we have, yes, inflationary, real strong inflationary pressures. I don't think they're going to remain, hopefully, this bad, but I think we're going to start really seeing the impacts. Even at the going into next year and all throughout next year, you're going to start seeing the recessionary impacts to demand is what I'm worried about. So even though we see other marinas are, the information that we get from other people is that they're going to use CPI, right? The June CPI numbers at 10.1% is their baseline for rate adjustments. We don't really see that as, I don't see that as being justified. Plus, we said, hey, let's take a respite. We need to start really looking at alternatives, for how we can generate other business and revenue. And then we need to do that due diligence, and that needs to be presented to the commission throughout the coming year before I think we can really, with a straight face, say we're going to do much, something that's empirically based. I don't like to use a dartboard.
Greg, if I may, Brian Anderson again. When do you think balance sheet and cash flow modeling will be available for public consumption?
It would be today, but the controller was out. Oh, she really? Had an a personal emergency.
Oh,
so we have that. Yeah,
we.
So we'll. But I didn't.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah. So
except for the emergency part, that's
not. Yeah, that's not good. Yeah.
So. And the other problem, another issue that we had, which is a concern just to note, the WordPress updated their software and it played havoc with our website. I don't know what the heck happened. So we are troubleshooting it. We have to have it done remotely, troubleshoot that. But that is an issue when you're trying to put public notices out. We really do depend on the website actually quite a bit. We also email people and then we publicly notice it. And the other thing is, in the next newsletter, I actually made sure that we put in the when the actual regular sessions are on the newsletter. Here forward, we'll post that. And then we have work sessions every Tuesday morning at 8:30, which people can zoom in on.
I use a dedicated computer that isn't hooked to the internet for all my stuff on the RAM. And then when I want a bill each month, I take that stick over and put it in on the internet to protect.
Are we in public comment session?
Yeah.
I'm trying to save my time and save time, but I don't want to run out of time in the public. Yeah. So I'm trying to respect it.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Just appreciate it.
Yeah.
So we've got a perfect time later.
We're not there yet because we do have.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions? Did I answer your question, Commissioner?
Yeah.
Adequately?
Well, and so essentially the budget item itself, in relation to the draft budget, I'm wondering if perhaps we have a special session, maybe mid-month or something
hearing.
Like that for a public hearing in relation to it. Part of the problem is not having our financial person here. For you know, detailed answers. Greg knows this stuff inside and out, but
we should probably do that within next week.
Okay.
When are you talking about the
public hearing?
And when is that?
Well, it wasn't listed on here, so it needs to happen within a short order.
We could do it at the work session, and we can post those documents on the website.
Yeah, I'm wondering about if we should plan that within, say, 2 weeks.
But there's a certain notice required for a public hearing.
Right.
It's 24 hours, but we try to, you know, we'll notice it as soon as possible. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Once the website gets back up.
So I'm going to note that we're going to do it within the next 2 weeks.
I think so. If we get enough time, you know, with the understanding that our website is kind of goofed up now, so for people to be able to, for us to resolve that and still be able to get that information out to you folks that have attended with your time, which I really appreciate you coming. You know, at this point, we sure can, though, take some public comment. We're not really going to go over the financial report then tonight. I mean, you know, I don't know. Do you want to just go over that real quick? Because that's our next item here on the agenda.
Yeah, I can go over, you know, let me pull up the
before we do that.
At
what point will there be a full opportunity for people to hear the strategy behind the marina rates and...
Yeah, that's why I was, because of these considerations, I was thinking that it might be beneficial to have what our draft is provided to people so that they can digest that, and then we have an actual
so that's part of the public hearing.
Uh-huh, correct. Yeah. So that's what I had thought, you know.
But they're more than welcome to, at our public comment period, to make a comment.
Exactly. So, Greg, you want to just quickly go over the financial report?
Yes.
And then we can go to public comment.
I want to print it out. That's on my own. When I print it on my computer.
For some reason.
So if you have the, I can just put that real quick.
Here it is.
That's it.
Here it is.
Our admin, person that helps Greg is actually out on a leave that she had prearranged. So
it's
all.
We have new 4 people on today.
Yep.
So in September, we had a total income of $324,201 and total expense of $230,873. Our net ordinary income was negative $2,926. And the net income overall, though, was $702.93. So I, you know, generally speaking, I looked at the.
There we go.
So I read the cash reserves this morning. I took a look at it, but we don't have the balance sheet, and she had to leave this morning. So all I know is that you know, our cash reserves continue to grow. I think last year or last month, though, we had it actually reduced from last month about pretty close to $100,000, and that was largely due to we had significant fuel. purchases that we haven't sold the fuel yet.
Right. Yeah.
So when I looked into it, I said, hey, why, you know, how come it dropped? I'm kind of surprised. But when I looked at it, we had actually signed the warrants, and it was largely the fuel that had been sold.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
It's really not much, but it looks good. I mean, we're doing quite well year to date. We've done really well. We're ahead of budget on almost everything.
Parking increases, I think, have been
good. Parking is up around 300,000, and it's basically right on par with pre-pandemic 2019 number, almost exactly. And we'll probably exceed the 2019 for parking revenue, which largely has, you know, few costs associated with it, so it goes to our bottom line. Mm-hmm. Fuel, it's just, I mean, we just got the price on fuel, it just went up 35 cents. So the fuel, like, you know, it's just problematic. I don't see, though, we're not seeing as many boats, or people just weren't boating, coming in very as much during September, October with the great weather. I just thought it was okay, but it wasn't what I really thought it would be, because the weather was amazing. I thought that we call them the shoulder periods, from the peak periods when we had peak demand for the guest dock. We usually try to expand, most every marina, you try to expand the shoulder periods to try to increase demand before the peak period, March, April, May, and then post-peak period in September, October. But we didn't see a tremendous uptick. Seasonal moorage, I will say we've only actually booked about half of what we have booked last year, which is a little bit of concern. There were about four customers that went to, they went up actually to Point Roberts. It was less expensive, and I guess they're okay to be, you know, just go in and out with their boat, you know, because you got to go over the Canadian border, if you know, to go on land. Mm-hmm. So we've lost a few people to Point Roberts, so we're looking at trying to replenish it this year, and we're not done yet. We're just getting going on that pretty aggressively. I'm sorry Ray's not here to be able to report out on that.
Mm-hmm. Greg, just quickly, it's Brian Anderson again. The numbers you just read for net operating income, that includes roughly $38,000-$39,000 in depreciation.
Correct.
Per month.
That's correct. $40,356. So just over 40,000 in depreciation and amortization, yeah. So if you added that, it would be about 41,000. And that's it for the financial.
Any other thoughts, questions? Okay. All right. Here we are. We're at the public comment period. Item 9. And I appreciate, yes.
Can you state your name?
Yeah, just for the...
Oh, my name is Chuck Turner.
Chuck, thank you, Chuck.
I'm on your list there. Mm-hmm. And just for the record, I'm a mortgage tenant. Uh-huh. So what I might ask might seem self-serving. So be it. But the question here, I look at the expenses. Mm-hmm. I don't see a breakdown of what the expenses are tied to the marina versus tying to running to a park, tying to running a parking lot. Uh-huh. And so I'm trying to tie together. So in other words, if we took the marina and just made it disappear... Mm-hmm. What's the port look like financially? So, and it looks to me, my gut tells me that my observation is that the port and its operation is heavily relying on the marina as its primary source of income, and that's probably subsidizing other operations, but without a breakdown of expenses, it's tough to tell.
100%. And so we built out this line of business model. It's not done yet to roll it out. It will be before the end of the year. And I can share that with you. And the marina accounts for, I mean, a huge percentage. You know, it's not half, but it's a significant portion of our total revenue. Now, when you say the marina, so we break it down in the lines of business. What we try to do is we broke it down between mortgage and fuel, parking, real estate, you know, leases, and the like. And then, it's, you know, the direct revenue, and then we have the non-direct revenue, which is, you know, mainly our property taxes, that kind of thing.
But I thought my comments would be helpful for the commissioners to actually see that breakdown. Mm-hmm. You didn't see it, which you probably have access to, hopefully. So you know what the breakdown of that is on that. And, so the other question is, you know, if that's the case, in continuing to raised in arena prices, and being kind of opportunistic, because we're talking about here, talk about how others going up and nobody's falling out and we're having full occupancy, but it's putting the burden on the arena tenants, in my opinion. And like I said, I'm kind of self-serving here. And so, and also being a port, being a public entity, are we trying to, is the port trying to increase shareholder dividends and value, or providing a facility for the community on that? And if the, is it right for the marina, if the numbers come out, is it right for the marina to be really providing like half the operating expenses of the park, and just to keep real estate taxes down, that if we had a park department, those real estate tax revenues might be higher if you're running a full parks department. We don't have a parks department here as far as I know of. So
we
just an observation.
Yeah, we have the Metropolitan Park
District. Oh, yeah.
We're on it.
Oh, okay.
We're in it right now.
The park
now.
I see is down there at the marina.
Yeah, yeah.
We're right, right here.
Yeah. Big parks department.
Right.
But it's agreed there's a carrying cost, and we do have the marina park, Mike Wallace Marina Park, we call it. We do have the Port of Kingston Kiwanis Park, which was converted from a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
And the other properties, the Top and Hill, those are not parks. Those are assets that we hold that we are looking at developing. But people consider it as part of the green space, let's say, but that's not the long-term intended use of that. But we haven't made a determination on that yet. So you're correct, though, and the same with North Beach, too. So there is a carrying cost to those assets because they don't generate any income.
But just for transparency, I didn't see it in this
financial information. That's a good point. Yeah.
And the other observation is, I understand the CapEx, if you will, capital expenditures, and I didn't know if the depreciation is done on a tax basis or probably this kind of a public accounting basis, but then that may represent the true replacement cost over the life expectancy or fixed assets. Mm-hmm. So do you have a breakdown of your CapEx and because to support?
Yes.
Okay.
So we so if the depreciation is based upon the book value, though, when they got the asset.
Mm-hmm.
And then they straight-line depreciate over that life of that asset. And that's how they come up with that number. That number doesn't really relate to the replacement cost. It understates quite a bit, actually, is what our problem is.
We're just going to know what's going to be 15 years from now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the other issue is these assets, like the marina, for example, was purchased and was created, I should say, in 1967. And it was funded really out of federal money.
Mm-hmm.
But the federal feds are not really stepping up. And they're, you know, basically, for the most part, kind of said, well, this is on you guys now. We've, you know, it's just like everything turned back, or they turned it, and the state turns it back, and pretty soon it rolls in where we have to start looking at this more like a private sector marina than a public sector, you know, an asset. And we don't have a tax base, so that the taxes aren't going to even come close. You know, we're right now, the millage rate is like 13.9 cents per $1,000 of value. And with the IMIN initiative, there's basically, it used to be that they would adjust the taxes at times for in the port district if they wanted to fund certain things. Now, basically, the only way you can go about it, you could issue an industrial development district, or more likely, you'll issue a limited tax general obligation bond, or you can just go to a bank, like, you know, we approached Liberty and other different people before they issued the bond. Probably shouldn't have issued, you know, I would not recommend to have issued that bond. I would have actually, it's expensive, so we would have probably just taken a loan out and taken the best rate.
Your bound council probably wouldn't agree with you because they get a nice fee for that.
Yeah, right.
Well, the bond council actually said, you know, normally anything under $3-4 million, they don't even touch it. Mm-hmm. And this was $1 million. Right. So, you would know, certainly, of anybody. But,
so the other question, you mentioned that there was still a balance on the loan was taken out, but it was a loan, it wasn't a bond. I see a general obligation expense.
It's a bond. It's a general obligation bond.
Yeah. Oh, so there wasn't a bank loan taken out?
No, it's a bond.
That's all amount.
I'm sorry, it's a bond.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That was long before any of us sitting at this table, right?
So, like, when I say that we would be have $2 million left, that would be after all debt paid off, for example. So we're net. We should be net by the end of this year, $2 million, and that's it.
So that interest expense, that general obligation, is for the recovering of the mortgage?
That's correct.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was confused.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's specifically for covered mortgage. Yeah. That's what that bond is.
Yeah. Very good. Is that it? Yeah.
But his answer about mortgage rates, Years ago, Lake Union Association sued Seal Shoal, or the city, Port of Seattle.
That's right.
They have to go to market.
That's right.
And they had to go to market. And right. I get, you know, calls from Seal Shoal or at, you know, the Port of Seattle every year about what is my mortgage rate, because they want to know all of our mortgage rates so they are at market.
Yes.
They're at market because they have to be.
That's correct.
And I don't know if it would apply here because you're not competing with any private mortgages here the way they were over there. But you've got a tax base here, and if you're on a market and you want to raise our taxes, it's going to be a disaster.
But are the taxes being raised to support the marina, or is it being raised to support other operations of the port, like the park area that the whole population benefits from? So that without having to break down of expenses,
yeah.
I'm not sure.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And so I think that has a differentiation.
But
we still look at it as this is a value that this community has, this marina, and it should make us money to give us these benefits.
So you want to squeeze money out of the marina?
It's not squeezing money, it's going
so
at market rate for...
So you can put money back in the pockets of other people living in the market?
But you cannot give the mortgage away at lower than... Because that's the lending of credit.
Yeah, we're required to charge fair market value.
You have to charge fair market lending of credit. No,
that's why that lawsuit happened, was because they weren't charging fair market value.
Yeah, they were undercutting.
And they lost.
They were undercutting.
Versus if you're a public utility and you're providing a water system, you're only be allowed to charge an amount to provide a reasonable return, maybe a 4% return.
Yep, yep, yep.
So it's totally different because... Our
It's
right.
Yeah, it's thanks. apples
you're
and
right.
bananas.
Yeah.
More similar to a landlord not charging fair market rent.
Correct.
If you don't charge fair market rent, you're making a gift to your tenant.
Yep.
And we're not allowed to gift public
and
funds.
It's because we're a government. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why, you know, you look at the Port of Seattle rates, for example, and they're very, very high in the market. They're always in the top percentage, you know, top quartile for sure. And that was as a result, because they used to be significantly lower. There's also different minds on how you do valuation, right? They have a significant commercial component to their customer base. And see, ports, by law, we promote economic development. We participate in job creation. So they looked at the commercial mortgage, certainly, and they do charge different rates for commercial mortgage than they do for recreational mortgage. But they say that, and they justify it through because they create jobs, they're paying taxes. Those jobs, those people pay taxes in turn. So, but that was one of the reasons why they changed their pricing model amongst their five marinas pretty substantially after the lawsuit. And then now there's arguments on how do you determine fair market value. But one of the fundamental ones that people look at is, do you have a wait list, for example? But it has to be a little bit more than that, because the wait list doesn't necessarily mean that's a real wait list. We charge originally $25, right? For some people, that might be throwaway, just to have their name in case they decide to get a boat, what they wanted to, you know. So is it real? So you have to go through the wait list. So we increase it to $100. Just to try to filter out a little bit, like the people, when they first get on the wait list now, they have to pay a $100 fee. Because we go, well, I don't want to pay $100, right? I'll pay $25, but I won't pay $100. So we do look and go through the wait list, and I guess that, you know, I can't say for sure, because if you call them and they said, no, we're taking you up on that, my name's up, I have a boat and I'm ready to go. But we do try to go through the wait list, and I always ask Ray, it's anecdotal, it's nothing empirical or necessarily defensible. How real is that wait list? And are there people truly on the wait list that would step into that role? Otherwise, it's, you know, and some people, some marinas actually stop even publishing the wait list. But we actually publish the wait list. It's on our website. You can see the people that are there. But it's one way to determine, are, you know, is there latent demand that you're not servicing?
Right.
The other thing is, we do have turnover.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, it's a 4% turnover. It was 10 slips this year.
I can't, honestly, I can't go year over year since I've been, you know, I've been this band in my fourth year. I can't tell you exactly how many slips turned over each year. We should have that number, but I don't have it, but we could probably figure it out. But we are having some turnover where there was, people were pretty irritated because they said, I'm on the wait list for over a decade. I'm old. I'm going to die before I get off the wait list. I only have an opportunity, and I sold my boat. And I'm going to tell you, I'm a taxpayer, and I live right next to the marina. I'm pissed off. So that's not fair to me. It isn't fair that I don't get to even have an opportunity to get a boat in there. So one way you do that is you say, well, you're willing to pay, okay, but it isn't like eBay. It's not a true auction or anything like that. But, you know, you say, okay, we're going to start adjusting the rates. But the fundamental reason why we really were pushing towards rates was we know that we have an unfunded capital requirement.
Yeah.
And we're just trying to close that gap. You know, it's if it's a huge gap, and this is what happens if you don't build a cash flow model, you're not really looking to see, oh my God, I'm going to have this big balloon frickin' payment when we replace the marina or whatever asset. You ask yourself, you know, it's like saving for retirement. If I would have known I save a buck a year when I'm a baby, you know, when I let compounding take its freaking course, if I could earn a buck as a baby, I would have done it, you know. But usually people don't learn that it's a lot easier to do this over a long haul so you don't have major corrections. That's what we're trying to, we like stability and we like growth. So we've doubled the guest mortgage income. We doubled the parking mortgage, and then the pandemic freaking hit.
Yeah.
So we went from January of 2020
to
February
April.
Of 2020 in March to
and
April,
March.
We had
zero.
Little of any parking revenue. And that's a pretty, you know, parking cash cows, right? Generally speaking, that's why the Diamond family is quite wealthy. You know, you look at it, and that ate us up. So then we said, okay, we got to pivot. Let's really, really get aggressive on guest mortgage and bring in people into the marina. And so if there's empty chairs, you got to put somebody in that chair and generate cash flow just like a cruise ship does, right? They never want to sail empty. You also don't want to just let anybody in because you don't need the bad debt. You don't need a derelict vessel. We've been really super aggressive on the derelict vessel, managing the vessels. We're trying to work with the state to take over more state land so we could manage any risk in Apple Tree Cove. Like, that tug was on state property, unfortunately, but we were so on it. I came in November 26th of 2018, and that boat came in on September, and I know the staff had already had identified
it,
like, this
there.
Is a risk, and great, we're worried about that big tug. And I go, I know that big tug, that's an old tug, it was a Sauce Brothers tug. And right before it broke free, we actually had been working with, and we worked with the AG's office, we worked with the Coast Guard, we worked with the Department of Ecology, we worked with Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, we had everybody on the same
Coast
page,
Guard,
but we had a moratorium on evicting anybody, but it's on state property anyway. But if they were on our property, we could have evicted them, unless that moratorium, but as soon as that was done, the DNR, they were totally ready, and they worked with the AG's office, and the Kitsap County Health Department to humanely help those folks off of that boat. I mean, there was a lot of effort.
Finding them housing, everything.
Yeah. I mean, I've never seen a better actually coordinated effort between interagencies, and then the state actually took ownership of that and condemned the boat, took it right before it broke free.
Right before.
But that could easily end up on somebody's property.
Yep.
Well, it did wipe out the
marina
vessel money for that period of time.
It did. Yep, it took that fund. Yeah.
Derelict vessels is a huge, huge problem.
Yeah.
And,
they're much more easy to manage when they're floating, where you can take care of them properly. Once they're on the bottom, that's it.
We were really close tenfold to get rid of it much earlier. And then the moratorium came in by the state, and then, you know,
you got one out there now, don't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where we were looking to try to expand the port management agreement. So we manage submerged state lands through a port management agreement. Many ports do.
And then we can.
And often it's better for us because we have a vested interest in managing the local property, you know, the lands there. And then it helps with all the landowners, you know, the private landowners.
Can I sneak in one question? I know you're probably running out of time, but we're talking about funding your future capital as a port. Now, and a lot of that may be on the pocketbooks of marina tenants that's funding that, looking at the revenues. Is that going into a restricted account for future marina improvements, or can all of a sudden be used to build a building to give free rent to somebody who did economic development? You want to start a, you know, they put these buildings, I've seen ports do, where you let people start businesses and you don't charge a rent, incubator.
It sure wouldn't be free. We'd have to be market rate.
That's done by ports. So I know it can legally be done because I've seen it happen before.
So there is a committed account. So there's a committed account that goes only towards capital. And actually, if you look at the, you know, if we were to go over the capital program, it's almost all marine related support. We are looking at, you know, would we want to develop uplands, because we've had a couple restaurants that are gone now, right? And what we get for feedback, one, well, there's, you know, there, people want more services and more amenities, right? And if you look at us compared to other people, other marinas, you know, whether public, private, I think that would be a definite advantage. But you also need to make sure that it kicks off cash, and that's the, you know, we aren't going to do something foolhardy. So usually if you do that, like I've always pre-leased it, so you don't, we're not doing spec building. But if we were, we look at that, that's one option down the road. To your point, is everything, we do have what we, by resolution, there's $210,000 a year that go into what's not restricted, it's called a committed legally by SAO, just to get the terminology. I got corrected on that, but I know exactly what you mean. So there is a committed account, and all those funds, when you look at the reserve accounts, you can see, like, we might draw from that account to put in a piling or replace a dock or different things like that.
But it's marina related, though. Okay. Yeah.
But we do. But some of the funds definitely go into a general account, and that's where I referred to earlier, saying we don't have financial policies in place. I would say just from a cash flow model, even though I agree with you that obviously the revenue comes from parking or fuel or mortgage, primarily those are the, you know, those are the big three, and we get some money from leases, and we get a little out of we get a little money out of tax money, but out of the vast majority of it, it gets reinvested. Then the question is, well, what's the asset base? You know, could there be a transfer of the park over to the park district? They'd have to be voluntarily want to purchase that park, right? That would have been something they could have done. So there's things out there potentially, but we look at, there's really only so many buckets or sources of funding, right? Since we can't really tax our way out of this by any stretch of the imagination, not even close, right? So, and plus people don't like taxes, and then they go, well, am I really benefiting? You know, I get people go, well, I don't even walk down to the park. You know, I went around to HO with some HOAs and some different people and talked to them. But I think that the, you know, it's really from rents. There could be more uplands, just like in Edmonds. If you look at Edmonds, you know, how they've actually been able to generate, they also have a boatyard, which generates, kicks off. But they have a huge liability with the boatyard, so I'm not so sure there's a lot of upside on that boatyard over there.
Yeah, but then you have to have tenants that are making positive cash flow to pay the rent, so you have to look at that. You can't just...
Exactly.
You know, the business has to be a good business model, and I've seen ports let a shipyard come in, and the shipyard goes bust in a year, and they put all this infrastructure in to support this business.
Exactly.
And it's a loss.
And hold the bag.
The business model didn't make sense, and if you looked at it, you knew it wasn't going to make sense, but nobody really looked at the business model.
Mm-hmm. No, and then they might put it under economic development, they say under job creation, for example. So they, okay, it's bringing in, you know, jobs. But we look at it again, it's for, really from rents. We get it out of some tax money. You get it out of grants. We were successful in securing a little over 900,000 grants. We have to execute on that. And I think some people are really looking aggressively at appropriations. I'm not against any of those things. I'm just saying, like, grants can be, it's a Hail Mary at times. We were really successful, and you get kind of a 3-to-1 match or 2-3-to-1, sometimes 4-to-1 match. But the, And then you could go and you can apply for EDA grants as and other things. There's some things we haven't pursued. Now I'm looking at people, they're really pursuing trying to get an additional chunk of money through appropriations because there's all this money coming out of the feds right now, right? So that's what they're all lobbying for in order to replace
for instance,
heavy duty infrastructure.
Breakwater improvements, things like that are
and some of those,
great, big, huge
those
capital projects
don't generate any additional revenue.
Nothing. Yep.
And they don't really increase significantly.
Protect the resource.
So you're going to have to, you know, it's almost got to come.
Your next best investment is probably a parking garage. You make more money on your parking probably than you are on the marina when you put the expenses against it.
Parking garages, when
I
looked at
your parking right now, your expenses for there are very minimal compared to the marina itself.
Yeah, versus the parking garage, which are pretty, they're kind of spendy.
Yeah, but you got to look at the alternative use of that property.
That's right. And it's waterfront property.
It's vacant property right now.
And it's waterfront property. You usually don't use waterfront property for parking, but.
You do when it's water dependent, though.
You can if it's water dependent.
Yes.
And also when you know that it generates cash flow. You have to really think about the business of displacing that, or 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You look at your costs of you're making more money on your parking than you are on your marina. Not gross, but in terms of your dollars you take in versus the cost of taking that dollars in.
Yeah.
You're making a better percentage on the parking.
The percentage of cost benefit. Yeah.
Than you are on the marina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Is there any other public comment at this point? We can move along into the next section here. I think if not, we will have commissioner reports. I don't have a whole lot really myself, but I always defer to.
I don't either.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'll go ahead and start. So, some of the commission was recently able to attend the conference up in Leavenworth for Small Ports Conference. And there was a part about delegation of authority and the commissioners are in charge of governance and the ED is in charge of managing the port, that ultimately the responsibility falls on the commissioners, but yet we have to make sure that we let the ED manage the port, and that we are supposed to be the strategic planners and visionaries for the port. But on the other hand, he's also supposed to loop us back in and let us know what the heck is going on, so that's a good thing. At the conference, you raised your hand when they were talking about delegation of authority, about updating the list. And so I'm hoping that you're gonna follow through on that. Mm-hmm. And they also talked about that when a contract is issued, that the amount should be, instead of being it being 100% of what the contract was, that it should be 110, so that the ED wouldn't have to come back and ask for permission to do it if it was just a little bit over what.
Cost overruns.
Yeah, so they said that's common practice, that's how it's mm-hmm. done. Something to think about for future things. Okay, I put the part, ask Greg why he raised his hand. And also they were talking about the PTPO, RTPO, and MPO.
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah. I'm hoping that in the future, because he went really, really fast because he was on a time limit.
Yeah.
And so we have to go over this again at a work session. I would really appreciate a rundown on that. I know the is it PTPO or RTPO?
RTPO.
Okay, that's state, and then the MPO is federal.
Federal.
Okay, but I'm sure that you, between you, Greg, and Mary, you guys know a lot more about this than I do, and I'm hoping that we can do further discussion.
They're talking about transportation policy, and they started off with the world of acronyms.
They did, and it was way too fast. But it was very informative. And they also handed out these books, and this time I was able to snag four of them since you guys had already hit the road. So I already have mine at home, so if you haven't gotten one yet, you should probably take one. it's all you ever wanted to know about managing a port.
And like they said, this is a living document. It's probably already changed, especially considering the funding section because of the federal funds that became available. So it's probably needs, and they said they will update it every spring. They're going to talk about updating it. But it has so much in it. It's just really impressive. They said it cost them about $30 to make each one of these, so they wanted us to be very, they were being kind of stingy with them, but because since four of us registered, I took four of them. So we've got them here now. So I think that was about what I wanted to report on, but it was really, if you haven't got one, take one. I have one at home, so Greg, you have two more here because I gave one to each of them.
Yeah, we know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is one for Tori or?
I got one for Tori and I got one for staff.
Okay.
Hot off the press.
We published it. I asked them if we could copy.
Oh, okay. So, okay. Because it's really great. I've just barely broke the surface on it, but a lot of good information. And they even had it about that gifting of public funds and things like that, that it's not necessarily always money that they're talking about.
Yeah.
So that was
policy.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's my report.
Great. I don't really have anything to add to that. I thought the seminar was really good. Of course, I attended the previous month at Leavenworth as well, the Environment Committee, Environment Conference. It was quite interesting as well. Lots of things on climate change that's happening. And when we think long-term and with climate change, of course, we think of sea level rise and things like that, too. So these are all things that we'll need to, you know, address in, you know, future thoughts of strategic plans and that kind of thing. And how we're going to handle that, which would be interesting. Let's see. Okay. Any other commissioner items? Let's move on to staff reports.
Well, I'll start. I'm Tori Grant, for those that don't know me. I'm the maintenance manager at the port. Since our last meeting, I was lucky enough to attend the Harbor Master and Marina Managers Conference in Anacortes. Great group of people. Glad I got to network with them. I actually feel really grateful that I was able to hang out with those guys for 4 days. Well, those people for 4 days. Everywhere from San Diego to British Columbia represented.
Neat.
San Francisco had a real big entourage there. Mm-hmm. And that was four people from different city park, marina, kind of a port district, a port authority. A lot of entities, a lot of discussion about dredging, employee retention, trying to get back to full staff. We're all seeing the same problems, and you know, how are we doing that? How are we getting back?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of discussion, one full afternoon seminar about preparing for the future to build on what Steve was just talking about, was where will the marina be for electric vehicles? Electric boats are here. They're just not a huge population of them right now here. Europe sees a lot of it, and how are we going to adjust for that? Marinas were built in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And everybody thought this was, you know, like the buggy whip thing, right? That'll never happen. So where do we go from there, and how do we plan for that now with infrastructure and power requirements?
Uh-huh.
And learned a great term that I've used probably more than a dozen times now since the conference. We did a lot of R&D, which means rob and duplicate. So with that group, we did a lot of R&D discussions, and everybody's kind of running the same problems. There's no textbook, and a lot of this stuff isn't off a store shelf. So you get through it because of the community that we work in. So that was a big piece of that week.
Uh-huh.
And it was great. I'm glad I got to do it. Really, that's kind of all it. We're just maintaining projects, getting through them, and getting closer to Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lights. Every day there's another stream.
There was the sign as you come into Kingston says something about the Christmas lights are coming. What about that?
I don't know anything about the sign. I hear discussions about the sign when I'm in the office, but okay. It is not my move.
Okay, I just thought you might know something about the lights. That was what I was really looking at.
I think there was some discussion about volunteer groups, so that might be part of that. I should take more time and read that sign.
There's some high school kids that are required to do public service sort of related things. And as I understand, a large group of Kiwanians, Key Club members, and then I think Rotary has a student group as well at the high school. And there's a good group of students that are going to come and help put lights up, which is awesome.
Yeah. Tori, at your conference, because Mary and I attended the transportation conference in Seattle the month before, and they were talking about the different fuel sources that were being used in other countries, a lot in other countries, not just electricity, but hydrogen, and there were three others. I can't remember what they are now. Can't remember now. But anyway, we're actually very far behind in the curve right now of the alternative fuel sources around the world that are being used. And did they talked about that at your conference too?
A little bit. It was more about the electric stuff.
Yes.
Just because hydrogen, it's safe, but will the Coast Guard allow it? Probably not.
Right.
Is it that safe? The discussion was led by one of the managers from Friday Harbor, and he has personal investment in this. He has an electric vehicle that, so he's really building on that for what are they going to do in the San Juans, just because they all feed off each other so locally. So it was really focused around the battery charger, the lithium ion, but then that's where we're at now. There's already a lot of discussion of what's the next battery, and which really brought down to who's going to make the plug? We need to know what the plug looks like before we can do anything. Because you can't have the Apple charger and the Google charger and the XYZ charger. We have to know what the plug looks like before we can do anything. So that would relate to the hydrogen and then the weighted flywheel power source and all that. But it was really the battery.
But they had the charger that was just like a panel, and the boat just kind of went up to it and it just kind of sat there next to it, charged, and then just moved away.
Contact plate.
They were talking about the one in Norway and Sweden and Finland. And
that was in a PowerPoint. It was just remarkable.
It was unbelievable.
And it works. It's
And large vessels.
Large, ships, ferries.
Coming
ships.
As well.
I know we're running real late, but to bring it into full circle on how far we are behind it as a boating community is the 30 milliamp GFCI protection on our power pedestals. Mm-hmm. That was Canadian and Europe 25, 30 years ago was the standard. And as far as marinas along the West Coast, we're still not up to speed. We're slowly getting there. It's a huge infrastructure issue between what we do and what the boat can allow and what the boat can take for power. And who's broken? Nobody. It's just we got to match the system.
It's fascinating. So,
but in a retrofit or in any kind of rebuild of marina docks and things like that, those are the things that also are going to be costly to think about. Well, we have to think about it and incorporate it. Yeah, that's great.
Well, I understand that there's a new electric car that is much less expensive than Tesla, much more fuel efficient, and I think we don't really have a clue what the car charging stations are going to need to look like in terms of either number or, technology. So.
Yeah.
Where's the power going to come?
Yeah, totally. Yep.
Yeah, I think for the ferries conference, what was interesting was the Washington State Ferry did come out with their capital plan. They just updated it, because I look at that and I watch it, because we were looking to see, are they going to electrify these and when? So we first looked to see, because this terminal was not slated under the earthquake different update. So the Edmonds side, I believe, actually is, but maybe it's because this one's already pretty good, but the electrification now is on their chart for the capital program to electrify the state ferries on the Kingston side. So that tells me that they're going to be having to bring that power, figure out what they're going to do in terms of the infrastructure along 104.
Yep.
So it's clearly, and it's being funded. So they've got 50% of their funding for the state ferries now
They're expected to get the other 50% because they did get a lot of federal money. So what I believe, it, you know, we will see it happening. And then we do know that some of the infrastructure, the water just got upgraded here along Washington Boulevard. We do, according to some of the information we do have quite a bit of electrical power, but certainly I'm not so sure it's really sufficient for electrification of the state ferry. But
yeah.
It's something to consider when we look at, they have a lease with us, right? There's only two leases that the state ferry really have, and one's with us and one's Anacortes. So it'd be nice if that was an opportunity to revisit that. One of the things, you know, the Rob duplicate, I think, the one thing I really was impressed with was at the WPPA, which is our really our primary trade association, it's Washington Public Ports Association. The Washington Public Ports Association, they are kind of lobbyists, but they also do education. But they, so they give presentations, and the people that came were, they had a person from Port of Everett, and she does, she's head of all procurement at Port of Everett. So like they're doing that $550 million development up there for on their land side. What I was really impressed with, we're really small. We don't have the assets and the people assets to be able to do procurement in a classic manner necessarily. But what was really cool was the ability to, they gave us all these resources that we can tap into their resources. They're very easy to, we can piggyback on contracts. And what they're doing, they're using national contracts with any public agency and piggybacking on theirs. So they're sourcing these various contracts around the country to lower their costs. They piggyback on those, and then they open it up to everybody that's a public port to access some of their information, be able to piggyback in turn on theirs. So we're so small, it may not be, you know, a huge thing, but it could be a real advantage, you know, if you see, it's critical you consolidate these, because we're looking at lowering our capital costs, right? So if somebody else is buying pilings at a fraction of the cost that we would, if we're buying 10 pilings and they're buying 1,000 pilings, mm-hmm. we can piggyback on their contract, and I think that will be really important. But you need it to be really simple. You have so much time to research this stuff, and they've made it really simple for us to be able to access their database and information.
They just have the cash, too.
Right.
True words. Jeff, thank you. So that's it for now.
Very good. Okay, well, let's see. We want to run along here. So our next regular meeting, now this is 6:30.
No.
It should be
1.
1.
We rotate 1 to 6:30.
So our next regular meeting should be here, I believe, in this room, November 16th, 2022, at 1 p.m. So again, it's in person and hybrid as well. We've got a couple of guests here as well. If you have any questions on when our special meeting is going to be, we will have that on the website. But I think what we'll have to do is pull together that draft budget hearing, and we'll take additional testimony at that point and public comment too.
I think I have everybody's email here, so I'll just roll you into the notification so that you have it. If you want continual notifications, you have to kind of give us permission. You go into our website, and on the landing page at the bottom, it says you just sign up for it and you have your email. That way, you're not getting unsolicited emails.
It's an auto generated thing.
And then we automatically, they always get notifications of any of our meetings.
Yeah.
Might be a good idea to also put it on the sign.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
There's a lot of people.
Special meeting, yeah. 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 That sounds good. We'll make that so. All right.
The other thing is, we're starting our audit with SAO, and it's a 3-year audit.
Yeah.
We've been in contact with them ongoing, it's started this week, basically.
Oh, it did. Okay.
But
yeah.
I think they're not coming in until next week.
Right. Yeah, the state auditor's office has a procedure with all governments, so. This is just a normal audit, if you will. Yeah. Yeah. I think we're about getting ready to get booted out of here, too. I just saw someone from the front desk, probably. So I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Okay. Second.
And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you all very much for coming. I really appreciate it.